Welcome to ID the Future from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. In this first part of William Dembski's appearance on the Gilmore and Glahn show, John Gilmore interviews Dembski, who summarizes the theory of and science behind his latest book, Being as Communion. Dembski also discusses what he believes is the great weakness of Darwinian evolution, the information problem.
With us today is William Dembski, a well-known thinker in the field of intelligent design and related issues concerning the origins of the species, to use a phrase, and evolution and the evidence of design in nature. Bill and I have known each other since 1999. Apparently, Bill, we were once younger. Welcome to Gilmore and Glahn.
Great to be with you, John.
Bill is a senior fellow with Seattle's Discovery Institute and a research scientist with the Evolutionary Informatics Lab. Dembski is a leading theorist for intelligence design and has published articles in mathematics, engineering, philosophy, and theology journals, and has edited or authored over 20 books. The Design Inference, Eliminating Chance Through Small Probabilities, is the first book on intelligent design published by a major university press. He founded the first intelligent design think tank at a research university, Baylor University's Michael Polanyi Center. He lectures widely on intelligent design and has appeared on various radio and television programs, including ABC's Nightline and Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. Bill, you have a relatively new book out called Being as Communion, and I was wondering if you could tell our listeners here in the Upper Midwest what that book involves and how, if at all, it furthers your previous research and your previous thinking, your previous publications, which we'll return to after we deal with the most recent work of yours.
Right. Well, I came to this discussion of intelligent design as a mathematician trying to understand patterns in nature that point to intelligence. And this is actually a pretty old notion. I mean, Claude Shannon, who's probably regarded as the founder of modern information theory, he was thinking in terms of the transmission of intelligence. I mean, that's how he even put it about information. So these patterns, you know, when we look at Mount Rushmore, we see a pattern there that tells us there's an intelligence behind it. On the other hand, if you look at the faces of the mountains next door, those will look like the effects of wind and erosion. No intelligence, as far as we can tell, that's responsible for the patterns there. So we have these basic intuitions about patterns that are the result of intelligence, and then patterns that, for all we know, have no intelligence source. And when you start looking at patterns, well, how do those patterns get there? And information, the idea is putting form on things. And so this project of intelligent design, developing statistical methods for identifying intelligence, led very naturally to the idea of information, tracking information, what is the sort of information that's required to make evolution work. So that was, as it were, a problem logically downstream from my initial work on intelligent design. And then the question arose subsequent to that, well, what does the world have to be like if information and intelligence are fundamental? And the problem is that the academic world and the intellectual world in the West is overwhelmingly materialistic. And it's really hard to get information and intelligence in there. In a sense, information becomes a byproduct of matter and the way it's structured, but it's not something fundamental, something that's downstream from matter. But a number of theorists have, in the last 20, 30 years, been exploring the possibility, well, what if information is, in fact, more fundamental than matter? And so that's the sort of problematic, the issue that I'm dealing with in that. The subtitle of Being as Communion is A Metaphysics of Information. So it draws on science, but it really is more philosophical work. It draws particularly on my work with the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, some basic theorems in the spirit of these no free lunch theorems or conservation laws of information, which basically says that information cannot be the sort of information that we see, especially in life, can't just be created by random forces, that basically it has to be drawn from another source, and as you go back, try to trace the chain of information, the information that needs to be accounted for becomes worse and worse. In a sense, there's no free lunch with information. That's the great fallacy, in my view, with evolutionary theory, that it argues that you can basically get information from nothing. The idea with evolution is that you explain complexity in terms of prior simplicity. It's not a great feat of evolutionary theorizing to explain how cavefish lost the use of their eyes and therefore now only have eye nubs. That's a case of devolution. It's a case of information loss. The question is, how do you get those eyes in the first place? That's an increase in information. And I would say the great fallacy of Darwinian evolution is to think that that information can be accounted for in terms of some prior simplicity. And in the results that my colleagues and I have been arguing for mathematically is that, in fact, the information problem intensifies as you try to account for that information responsible for the eyes. It's even a bigger information problem. And there's some good mathematics, and we've got some peer-reviewed publications that argue that.
That's fascinating, Bill. What would your strongest critic say in response to your work, such that Darwinian evolution, natural selection, random mutations, the standard biological and materialist approach to our world, which, as you know, I don't need to tell you, is pervasive in our culture. What is their strongest critique of your thinking, and how do you address that? In other words, if you're positing that as you go further back, information becomes, I don't know if you use the word more complex, but certainly harder to account for under the standard rubrics, A, do you have a solution to that? And B, whether you do or not, what's the response to this from the establishment?
Sure. Well, I mean, the results are that we've proven, I mean, they're well established. I mean, these are mathematical theorems that it shows that the information problem intensifies. And so what you have is a regress. And the question is, you know, do you have to explain the regress? Where would it end? And we would argue that, in fact, intelligence creates information. We've got good evidence for that, and that's where ultimately it goes. But as a purely scientific question, you have this information problem that just intensifies as you backtrack the causal story. So the question then is, I mean, what you raised is, well, what's the best response to it? I don't think there is really a best response. I think in current cultural climate, I think there's one that ends up being effective, which is just, well, there's got to be something wrong with the mathematics because we know that evolution works. So there's something that's being missed by the way you're modeling search, evolutionary search in particular. The problem, and you can actually find this if you look, my old physics advisor at University of Chicago invited me in August to speak at a seminar at the University of Chicago. And that's been posted on YouTube, so you can find it if you just look under my name, Demski and Kadanoff, Kadanoff.
If I can jump in, Bill, listeners should know that at the time that this took place, of course, I was following it in real time. The reaction was the barbarians had been let inside the gates of the city. It was the end of Western civilization as we knew it. It was the end of the scientific method. It was the triumph of some sort of vague theocracy.
Look, apocalypse around the corner. I mean, that's
yes.
What's,
yeah. But for the for listeners who are just becoming acquainted with you, it's difficult to overstate how, at least in my view, Bill Demski, unhinged that reaction was. I thought it was astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it wasn't universal. I mean, I had some nice interactions, but Jerry Coyne in particular, who's an
Bingo.
Geneticist there and has a blog, Why Evolution is True, he was, I think, contacting provost, I don't know if it was the president. The president, by the way, of University of Chicago was one of my former math teachers when I was a graduate student there back in the 80s. But
he knew you were a bad seed way back then, Bill.
but anyway, to come back to your question, you know, I think the response is just to say there's got to be something that's missing from this model of search. My response to that is that this is a very, very general formulation of search. It really encompasses anything that computer scientists and mathematicians mean by search. And if you're going to say that it doesn't apply, then basically you don't have a theory of evolution. I mean, if you can't even in broad strokes characterize it as some sort of stochastic process or search in this broad sense, I think then you're mystery mongering. And so that's where I really left it in that talk. And Leo Kadanoff agreed with me. He said that the ball is in your court, evolutionists. to respond to this. So, you know, I think it's showed that these methods really don't apply. And the fact is, I mean, the very notion of an evolutionary search, I mean, this is not something invented by intelligent design theorists. This is a notion that evolutionists have pushed. So I don't think I'm doing anything untoward or sneaky here. It's just these methods apply, and there's a real information problem. And that's why Bob Marks, my colleague engineer at Baylor University, we call it the Evolutionary Informatics Lab. I mean, the adjective there is evolutionary. The noun is informatics. It's information. Information is required to drive the evolutionary process. The Darwinian thinks that Darwinian selection, natural selection, is able to create information, and our results show that that can't happen.
Then to do violence to the sophistication of your work and Professor Marks and other good men and women in what I'll just say is the design field generally, at the risk of doing violence to it, then do you simply premise that information in all of its variety and multiplicities was or has been pre-existing since, let's go with something everybody knows about, the Big Bang? In other words, was that information encoded, or was the, to move into physics for a minute, was it embedded in the structure of the universe such that as it developed, it would be found and utilized? If I'm making sense.
Yeah, you are. I mean, it's basically you're saying, I mean, if the information problem intensifies as you track back causally, then where did it ultimately come from? Where did it ultimately reside? And I think you've got two options. One is that it was there in the universe from the beginning, which suggests some sort of intelligence, perhaps naturalistic or imminent intelligence in the universe. And that would be, I think, more compatible with a pantheistic notion. But the thing is, in our experience, intelligences create information. I mean, William Shakespeare puts ink to paper, and there's some novel information. So intelligences create information. And so an alternative would be the more Judeo-Christian ethical monotheism approach, which would say, you know, that the information ultimately traces back to a transcendent creator God. So that would be an option as well. I would say intelligent design as a scientific theory really cannot distinguish those two, and that's just fine. I mean, because intelligent design is not principally or even peripherally, I would say, a theological position. It's a scientific position with theological implications. And for that reason, some years back, the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies invited me to speak there, and it was a very congenial event. I mean, they were quite open to intelligent design. And I mean, the idea that there is a purposiveness or an intelligence behind the world and that there could be evidence for that, I mean, that's not a foreign notion to most people. I mean, most people historically have believed that there's some sort of intelligence behind the world. I think the sort of materialistic atheism that we confront these days is really an anomaly, historically speaking, and yet it has become extremely powerful in the intellectual and academic world.
Join us for more of John Gilmore's interview of William Dembski on the next episode of ID the Future. For more about Dembski's latest book, Being as Communion, visit beingascommunion.com. For more coverage and commentary on the debate over evolution and intelligent design, be sure to visit Evolution News and Views at www.evolutionnews.org.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.